Morgan Malone, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute of Ireland, and you're very welcome to our podcast series, Data Leaders. In these podcasts, I chat with some of the most important and influential people in the data analytics area in Ireland, and I try to find out a little bit about the people and personalities behind the careers. I also want to explore their philosophy in relation to data and analytics in general, and also find out a little bit about where they think the industry is going in the future. I hope you enjoy this series of interviews, and if you do, please subscribe below. Thank you. So good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Data Leaders Series podcast. I'm Lorcan Malone, your host today, and I'm delighted to welcome our guest, very special guest, Jennifer Cruz. Jennifer is Head of Data Science at the Aon Centre for Innovation and Analytics. Good afternoon, Jennifer.
Good afternoon, Lorcan.
How are you doing? Jennifer, we were doing this at a very strange time, I suppose, in our lives, both working from home today. How are things in Aon, and how are you guys dealing with the current situation?
I have to say it's a moment like this where I feel very grateful to work for Aon, a company that's so well established and mature, and I'm actually kind of blown away with how the company is responding to everything. And I suppose, first of all, on the duty of care they're showing genuinely to their employees. Right. At a global level, we've had our CEO, you know, sending us weekly videos, updates, assurances that, you know, we can survive this, we will survive this. And then locally, our local CEO, Fergal, just, yeah, you know, continuously present, ever present, business as usual. The IT infrastructure has held up wonderfully. And, you know, everything is business as usual, in as much as it can be. Projects are kicking off, wrapping up, you know, and employees are remarkably taking so well to the agile way of working, you know. Yeah. So on the duty of care front, Aon has just been phenomenal. And then second of all, at the more global level, Aon itself, as one of the world's leading risk management firms, is just really stepping up as well in the middle of this crisis. And I would advise anyone who you know, has an interest or is being affected their business in any way by these events to check out our corporate website. I think we're a very unique firm in that, you know, this is our space, risk and uncertainty and events just like this. So a lot of fantastic resources and tools coming out from at a corporate level and around the globe, indeed.
Excellent. How big is your team there, Jennifer?
Our team in Dublin is 100 employees, and that's across the whole spectrum of data and analytics. So everything from data architecture, you know, right up to design and everything in between. So we have 100 in Dublin, about 100 in our sister centre in Singapore, and 50 in our third centre in Krakow. That's and awesome. That encompasses the whole suite of the innovation and analytics side of things.
Okay, so it's a big team to manage remotely then?
It is, a phenomenally big team, you know, yeah, yeah.
And are they all at home then?
Everybody is at home, bar essential employees. And I think that's, you know, that's something that Aon, from the moment the notice came out, it was employees first and everybody working remotely.
Right, okay. And how do you manage that, Jennifer? I mean, I assume that you're still trying to supervise work and direct it and lead the team, and kind of, how are you actually managing to do that? Are you spending your life on conference calls?
Yes, there's a lot of time on conference calls, for sure. Yeah. But, you know, the team and I have also adapted some kind of, you know, other ways of chatting to each other. So we have our WhatsApp group. Right. And, you know, we've got a sort of a team space. And so at the team level, people are calling, talking, texting. But you know, our centres, thankfully, we were already working in a very agile way. And a lot of that is so easy to transfer into the remote working space. So the daily stand-ups are still happening and individuals are going off, working on their tasks, coming back to their teams, you know. And I guess people are being a bit more innovative about when they work. And, you know, we've all met everybody's children at this stage as they kind of pop into the screens in and out of meetings. But it's really inspiring, actually, how well people themselves are just organizing their own lives around this, you know.
I was talking to another member, Kelly Marie from Oracle, this morning. She's a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I was asking her how she was coping with all the conference calls with two very young children. She said she was on an all-hands call recently, and her son came in, her three-year-old, to tell her proudly about the poo he'd just done.
I can certainly empathise. Yeah, I'm at home with a 2 and a 9-year-old, and you know, Peppa Pig and iPads only get you so far, you know, unfortunately.
No, you just have to. Yeah, I think people are kind of rolling with it very well. I just think even in terms of some of the events that we've done online so far, there's sometimes you get ropey sound, a bit of ropey visuals, you know, things. Some people find it a bit more difficult to face a screen and talk into it, you know,
yes.
Make a presence. Yeah. But, you know, I think people are very forgiving of it in general. And I think we're just learning to kind of cope. And maybe there's a little bit more respect for human beings and the human condition when we're all suffering, you know, we're not all suffering at the same level, I suppose, but we're all part of
this. We're in this together.
Yeah, we really are. Yeah.
It's certainly bringing out the best of a lot of people. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know, I'm seeing a lot of these motivational affirmation mails floating around and stuff, but yeah, it's really bringing out that shared humanity, that shared empathy. Yeah. And that's wonderful to see. And I think, you know, as difficult as it is, and I'm sure any parent listening here, particularly of young children, knows it's, you know, it is difficult. Let's not pretend it's not. It's difficult juggling home and work and trying to balance it all. But I suppose the silver lining in it is, you know, we are getting to spend more time with our kids than we would ordinarily. And, you know, there's memories being made now, and yeah, they're probably imperfect. And, you know, schoolwork is slipping and, you know, whatnot. But there's a lot of nice memories being made now with all that home time.
Yeah, I as I was saying to you before we came on air, I spent a lot of my life traveling when I was younger, and certainly when my kids were young, there's a lot of photographs in the house of, you know, wife and two children and no husband, you know, because all the things, I was really always traveling. I was always in Asia or in Europe or whatever for years when the kids were small, and I really regret it. So I think maybe it's a great opportunity for parents to engage again with their kids, as you say, which is nice.
And as a working mother who's kind of always worked full time and kids have always been in full time care, I suppose you've got to look at the bright side of it that way, that it's a lovely opportunity to, to kind of just have time, as I said, imperfect, but time nonetheless.
Yeah, well, don't we spend all our lives with our colleagues more than anything else?
I know.
Our priorities are a bit mad sometimes when you think about it.
But you know what I realised? I don't think I quite realised, you know, how much I really like the people I work with and enjoy interacting with them. I don't think I really fully grokked that.
Oh, yeah.
Until all of a sudden I wasn't seeing these people every day, you know?
No, I totally agree with you. I really love being with people. I genuinely really enjoy it. And the older I'm getting, the more I appreciate how people can stun you. They can be, you know, underestimate people at your peril, you know? The more I get to know people, the more, like finding out that you were in a band, but we'll come back to that. people will surprise you in lots of ways, you know, and it's great. I love it, you know.
Yeah.
And can we take a little step back? Jennifer, I know you a couple of years now, you were in Aon, and before Aon, you were working with Core Media, I know that was when we first kind of met, when you were working as part of the data team in Core Media. But you actually started your career as a mathematician. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I suppose when I was in school, I was torn between maths and English, actually. They were my two kind of great loves and passions back then. But there's just something about maths, if it gets a hold of you, it's like a drug, you know, very hard to give up. And I remember actually packing away my maths books after the leaving cert. And at that point, I had put down some sort of literature thing on my CEO form, but I just couldn't bear then to part with maths books. So I did the change of mind, and I kind of devoted all my college years to pure maths, which at the time, you know, a lot of people were like, you're not really going to get a job. What are you doing? Because a pure maths degree doesn't really qualify you for a whole lot, you know, unless you're going to stay in academia. And I suppose that was kind of my intention. I thought I would. And so I studied in Galway, did a degree, a master's there. I headed off to New York in 2006. And, you know, with the full intention of just moving into that whole academic life. But funny that you mentioned people. When I, and how necessary they are, when I landed in New York City, I was going to Grant. And it's not on a campus. It's just a building beside Washington Square. There's no real sense of collegiality or belonging to a campus. And it was very kind of isolating, and mathematicians wouldn't be the most sort of communicative of people normally, you know. So I remember just kind of really thinking to myself, oh my God, I don't know, can I work in this space for my whole life? This kind of very solitary, isolated world where you just work on maths all the time. So I started to think about, you know, different options that I had. And at the time, I suppose the main route for out of maths was to become a quant. So this was pre the crash, you know. Yeah. And I kind of toyed with that idea. And my timing was awful. The crash happened just as I was leaving academia, and I landed back in Ireland. But thankfully, this thing called analytics, data science, you know, it was really kicking off here in Dublin. And I got my first start with Danske Bank in their finance department, actually, as I think I was being called an analyst back then. But that was how I kind of made the transition out of maths into this field.
But just before we go into that, Jennifer, yeah. You're in. First of all, what is a Fulbright scholarship? winning, first of all, you want to be quite a swat to win a Fulbright scholarship, I would imagine, and then doing a postgraduate fellowship in NYU. Mm-hmm. Wow!
It was a great opportunity. Yeah.
What is a Fulbright scholarship?
It's actually a wonderful thing. You should ask my mother, because she name drops this at every opportunity.
My daughter, the Fulbright scholar, is drowning. Yeah.
I'm like, it's embarrassing. Anyway, that's a lovely initiative. There was actually a guy called Fulbright, American, who set it up. And it's this fund that is mostly funded by the US government to encourage cultural exchange. So for some bright minds from around the globe to get an opportunity to come and study in the States, and vice versa, for people from America to get to go and study and live in another country. And of course, it's to promote it's an academic prize, obviously, but they also really care about the cultural exchange element of it, so that you will go to the United States, live their life, learn about their country, and they'll learn about Ireland or whatever in our case, and then you come back, and they actually send you back. There's kind of rules that, it's not like your ticket to a green card. It's your ticket to study there, to live there. They kind of want you to come home. And then you're encouraged to come back to the States after a few years if you want. But they're very keen on the cultural exchange.
Right. I have to say, I was over in New York last year. I was down around the Washington State Park and down where NYU is.
Yeah.
Just the most gorgeous place.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know New York at all. I only know that kind of square few miles down there, East Village, West Village, and it's beautiful.
But I think that's where it's at. You know, I mean, we were staying up off Times Square, and I hated it. But when I went down there, I just loved it. That kind of leafy,
isn't it?
It's almost suburban, even though you're in the.
I know, and there's very few high-rise buildings down there or anything. It's a lot of the old red bricks. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So moving on from your blazing academic career then into, and then you were doing some work with Danske Bank and Google and Microsoft and Aon, and then you moved into consulting with FTI, which seems to be the home of half the people in Ireland in terms of analytics. So everyone I seems to have brushed against FTI.
I'm glad you have pointed that out. Just really good to give a shout out to those guys. So they were formerly Distinct Consulting and got acquired by FTI. But you're right, it's incredible. If you look at leaders in any number of companies around Dublin at the moment, most of them have kind of come from Distinct, or as you said,
I was just doing a podcast yesterday with Darren O'Neill from
great guy, one of my bosses.
And one of, you know, and then I was on to Emma Pitt as well from FDI. So it just felt I often seem to brush against people from bump into people from FTI. You know, it seems to have been very good.
It was a fantastic company, fantastic people. And I think when you have really strong leaders, it was just a perfect example of how that kind of top down can work so well if the people running the business are at the top of the game.
Yeah. And then you went into core media, which was quite a change.
It was. Absolutely. It was like landing in Oz, you know, or Kansas. I don't know.
Very different.
Very different.
Very different. And kind of setting up. Was it setting up and rolling out data in core media? Was
exactly. That- yeah. So, you know, I don't know, you know, for anyone who isn't familiar with them, Core are Ireland's largest media company. They are, you know, I think about 300 employees now, Irish owned. The guys who own the business work in it. And they are just a phenomenal company who touch on now all aspects of marketing, brand, communications, research, data. And I think it's something like one in three advertisements you see anywhere you go in Ireland, they've been placed by Core. Right. So, you know, they are a massive player in the media space. A very brave and sort of innovative company, because this is going back quite a while now. When Justin Cullen, who was then their chief digital officer.
Oh, Justin's really good, yeah.
He's fantastic. Yeah, just had this very, you know, courageous vision about how data and technology could genuinely not only transform core media, but transform the media industry. And I think Justin was well ahead of the curve on that one. And he approached me then about helping him build that team, you know, building a data function within core media. And it was really phenomenal experience. Another great company. I've been blessed, actually.
Well, in fairness, I think you certainly seem to have been with organisations that have given you your head and allowed you to develop and you know, reach the heights that you've reached, which is a great reflection on them, but also on you. And then Aon. So going from core media, that's kind of, I suppose, quite brandy and sexy and kind of, you know,
cool, very cool,
into the very sexy and cool insurance industry. I've been in the Center for Innovation and Analytics, and it is kind of cool, and it is
kind of cool, but
as an industry, it wouldn't strike you as the coolest, but. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing there, Jennifer, because I can understand we say data and analytics in terms of insurance around risk management or risk assessment and maybe pricing products. But maybe you could explain a little bit more about what you actually do.
Yeah, I will for sure. And if I may first, I know we laughed about it there and we joked about it. Insurance and risk in general, because Aon is much more than insurance. You know, it gets a very bad rap, and you're right, there is a perception that it's boring and stuffy and full of people in suits, and you know, but that is changing, you know, and even with that, that's just a product of how, you know, old and mature an industry it is. For me, insurance has always been a very attractive space and you know, sexy even, quote unquote, because it's the original data industry, and I've spoken about this a lot already, but there is a very natural appeal, I think, for people like myself who are curious and want to use data science to actually do meaningful, you know, innovative work. The insurance industry is a great place to be, and I think Aon, and particularly with the Centre for Innovation and Analytics where I work, Aon are, you know, acutely aware of how important data and analytics is, not just to the firm itself, but to the entire risk management industry. And so, you know, taking the move back to Aon, because I had actually worked there years ago as an analyst back in 2011. So taking the role to go back as the head of data science, you know, it was an easy move to make, because if you want to be somebody who, you know, and let's face it, data science is in its infancy as a science goes, you know, it's even statistics is a very young science. So for anybody who wants to really make an impact in this field, insurance is probably one of the best places to be able to do it. And so that's what we're about in the centre. We're 12 years old. So again, we were very ahead of the curve in terms of setting up a data hub in Dublin. Aon, we're ahead of the game on that one. Back then, when it was set up, it was mostly about using data in a skunk worksy kind of way to solve the company's biggest challenges. Isn't that what we were focused on, was very much using data and technology to improve the way we did business at the time. That has changed dramatically in the last sort of 5 years. And the focus in the center is about completely, really, and I don't like this word, but, you know, disrupting the industry, the whole risk management industry. And Aon are not going to be victims of this disruptive change that's going to come. They want to shape it. And my role as head of data science is really, you know, advising the rest of the business leaders on the role data and technology can play in that disruption and in that sort of making ourselves as relevant as possible to clients. Because our clients' worlds have evolved so much in terms of risk. And even look at what's happening right now, you know, it's an ever-changing landscape. And trying to advise on that and mitigate against it, we have to be using data and technology now. It's just a given.
For sure. And,
you know.
I think, look, you know, when you think about it, so many businesses are just data, really. I mean, they're data and numbers. That's kind of, that's what insurance is. That's what lots of industries are. I suppose as I go on in this journey, this analytics journey, the more I'm kind of realizing that that's, it has to be at the heart of everything.
Yes.
And I'm just thinking about even the current scenario, and I posted on LinkedIn the other day about this, and it got a good bit of traction. The idea that really was the WHO, the Irish guy that's kind of the head of emergencies there, saying, look, if we're coming out of this, we're going to have to do it in an iterative way, step by step, open out a little bit and then assess the data. Then open out a little bit more and assess the data again.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, and I think it's becoming more and more pivotal and central to our lives.
Yes.
But maybe analyzing data is going to, from now on, is going to become much more important again, given that it's going to be life and death.
Exactly. Yeah.
Forward. So, enjoying the job, Jennifer. What's next for you? Are you have you more ambitions within Aon? Do you want to grow? What's the next few years going to look like for you?
You know, I my own demise, I never plan too far ahead. And
this is the analyst, the predictive analyst, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it says exactly, it says the predictive analyst. You know, certainly Aon itself globally is transforming and, you know, putting data and analytics very much front and center. So yes, for sure, huge opportunity to grow in Aon, and
very good. And do you think you'll stay in Ireland? I know that the analytics or Aon is an international global organization. Would you at any stage move internationally with them, or do you feel that you'll stay in Dublin?
Or that's a great question.
I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, and funny enough, I was in Boston literally just in the nick of time. I was over there the last week of February. And I haven't thought about living stateside for a long time, but it rekindled my affiliation for the States being over there. And then again, I said to myself, wow, you know, I'm grateful that I work for a big multinational corporation, because things like that are very easy to, you know, to make happen. We have a fascinating team over there, actually, Aon do. The IP Solutions Group are based out of Boston. And they're doing some phenomenal work at the moment as well, actually, in terms of new and emerging risks companies are trying to tackle. You know, traditionally, insurance and risk was all about your tangible physical assets, your plant and your property, and then liability, of course. But as you know, in this day and age, the heaviest thing on anyone's balance sheet at the moment in terms of an asset is their intangibles. It's their IP.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like 83% of the Fortune 500 balance sheets. If you add them up, 83% of the world's kind of assets or wealth right now are intangible.
Yeah.
And this is something Aon are really focused in on the moment as well. Is like industry has to catch up with that. It's not about insuring your machinery, your factory anymore. There's, you know, there's a lot more to be considered.
That reminds me, a friend of mine, Jim McCabe, Dr. James, the storytelling guy, I think you might have come across him at one stage. He did a session with us, but he says, look, it's all IP. everything is IP. That's the game we're in. That's what business is. It's IP. So for sure.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So just on the personal side, Jennifer, I touched on it earlier, but you formed a band at one stage. I thought the name was hilarious. The Predictables.
Predictables. I know. I am infamous for my nerdy puns, but actually I don't think I'm responsible for that one. That was another nerd. No. Came up with that. That was great fun. That was in Core Media. And back to how that industry, that whole industry, the media world, it really is so much fun. They know how to, you know, have fun and kind of rally people together. But there was some industry event, one of these Ireland's Got Talent-y type things. But we discovered, you know, that the majority of people on my team, I knew this anyway, were musicians. So there's always this nice overlap, I think, between data scientists, mathematicians, and musicians. You'll find them intersecting quite a lot. So anyway, we decided we'd take part, in the Ireland's Got Talent thing and called ourselves Predictables. It was a one night only, but it was the best. You know, you hear so much about team building and you try and kind of orchestrate good team building events. We ended up renting some practice space in a little laneway off the back of Bachelor's Walk, I think it was. It's some weird little recording studio. We'd go there and rehearse, get some beers, play music together. And, you know, I think we practiced for maybe 5 weeks in the lead up to the thing, did 5 sessions. And it was, just great fun altogether. We didn't win. I think we were done out of it, but
of course, yeah. But yeah, I must say that kind of part, it's really important. Again, looking back, I did a lot of kind of acting and a good bit of music and stuff in Boston, played music around the world, hitchhiked through Germany and survived playing music when I was young. And when I look back again, it's kind of a regret that everything was about career. And
well, Lorcan, here's an idea. Maybe that should be an event for the Institute. I bet we are full of musicians.
Oh, you never know.
And we'll get to see you one night only, Lorcan Malone.
One night never, Jennifer. One night never. Listen, I sent you swiftly along. I sent you 3 tasks to finish up. And I asked I asked you to choose a book of your choice, a film of your choice, and a song of your choice. So I want to start with the book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying by Marie Kondo.
Yes.
Please explain, Jennifer.
I know. It's a weird one. By the way, you know, it was very difficult. It was so difficult to whittle down anything to, you know, your top. But anyway, I went with that book. That's a lady called Marie Kondo, Japanese lady. And she runs a consulting firm over there advising people on how to, first and foremost, declutter their lives. Oh. And then once you've decluttered your entire life from your, you know, in a physical perspective with your house, you'll never have to tidy again, the magic part, right? So you have to go around your home, and it could take 6 months, and you have to, you start with your clothes, and you have to physically touch everything, take everything out of every cupboard, and only keep the stuff you absolutely love. You have to touch everything. So if you pick up a top and you're like, yeah, I know, I feel good in that, you keep it. And if you pick it up and you even have to think about it, really, you probably should just throw it away. But you have to say thank you to the item before you throw it away. And so a friend of mine, this is just one element of the book, but a friend of mine recommended it to me years ago and I never read it. And then I got really sick with that terrible flu before Christmas and I was wiped out for a couple of weeks. So I read it. And really, it was life-changing. But I said to myself, when am I going to get the time to actually implement this program? And I'm finding now with all the at-home time, I've picked it up again and I've actually started. And I highly recommend it because it really makes you remember what it is you actually appreciate, how little you actually need. You know, there's a lot of, and myself included, getting fearful now about food shortages or a lack of this. Or, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in that. But when you're at home and you go through an exercise like that with that book, you just kind of really go, you know what, I need very little, actually. It's very little I need. Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommend. I think she has a Netflix series as well, if anyone's interested.
I like that whole kind of Zen thing. I mean, I certainly, I've been doing meditation for a long time. I think that's something you're into as well.
Yes. Yeah, I tried to.
I got really heavy into it at one stage, and I felt it was a little bit too introspective, and you know, it can bring you too much into yourself. But yes. there's a lot of clarity around getting rid of unnecessary burdens in your life. You know, be it material goods, or even as Buddhists say, all suffering, all desire is suffering. You know.
Yes.
You know, not to desire too much as well. Yeah. Now, your movie is The Magic Snowflake. So I had to look this up. It's a Christmas animation.
Yeah.
Excellent, yeah?
Yeah.
So tell me more.
Okay. And I used to be really cool and watch loads of cool movies. I actually used to work in a video store, but not anymore. So when
maturity when you don't give a damn anymore about impressing anybody. Which
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not cool anymore. That ship has failed. But
well, now you are cool. You were trying to be cool when you were younger.
But all my movies, nearly everything I watch gets picked by my 9-year-old daughter. And that's been the case for the last 9 years. So, you know, that's the only sort of genre I'm familiar with. But that movie, I just thought it was so special. We watched it while we were all sick before Christmas, just gone, 2019. And it's just a really touching movie about growing up and childhood and the stresses of adulthood and making that transition. So the premise is... this little orphan boy gets chosen as the next Santa Claus, you know, and he gets moved up to the North Pole and he's only about 7 or 8 and the old Santa's retiring and Mrs. Claus is like, can't wait to get him out of the house and they're going off on a cruise. And anyway, this little poor little boy is left with all this responsibility and all this burden. And you watch him, they call it grown-up-itis. That's what the affliction he ends up getting. And so you watch him just kind of break and crumble under the stress of it all. And I'll leave it at that because it's very lovely how it pans out. But nice little tips for anyone, I think, you know.
Okay. Well, the French do philosophy really well, don't they? They think about things in a little bit less.
In France, yes, they sure do. Yeah.
And finally, there's no questions required. With The Healing Has Begun with Van Morrison. We just, Van's a man. Yeah.
Isn't he the man?
Absolutely. From what I understand, maybe not the most pleasant company all the time. But
who cares?
Yeah,
you know, I would forgive him of anything. You know, what he has contributed to the world, he can be the grumpy, whatever, let him be.
Yeah,
it's
no,
funny, when I had to try and pick one song, I found that most difficult because music is very important to me always anyway. But I found really, oh my God, in the last, what are we, we're week 4 now of this remote working thing and you know, and all else that's going on. I found such a kind of sucker, I guess, in music. And I've actually made a playlist on Spotify. And there's about 50 songs there. So when I had to pick one, I was like, oh, which one? But I think, When the Healing Has Begun is a nice one.
So I've got to the stage now where I don't go and see the real thing anymore. I just can't be bothered paying 80 quid or 100 quid for a ticket and queuing up and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I love tribute bands, you know, and there's actually a really good Van Morrison tribute band called Celtic Note, and they've played locally here in Greystones a couple of times, and my God, there's 8 of them. I don't know how it pays them to do it.
Yeah.
But the lead singer is unbelievable.
Is he? And he's not... Have you ever seen The Last Waltz in the Olympics?
Yeah, no.
Have you seen that Van Morrison guy? He is...
No,
he does,
I haven't.
Have you not seen that? Oh.
But my favourite piece of music of all time is in The Last Waltz, the movie. The original one where the band were breaking up back in, I think it's about 1974. And Van Morrison comes on like they've
Caravan.
Had... They've Caravan.
So
they've had Neil Young, they've had they've had everybody, and he comes on an absolutely
I know it, and he's kicking his leg and I love it. But I can't believe you haven't seen the reenactment. There's a band from Crumlin actually, down the road from me, who once or twice a year they reenact the whole Last Waltz in the Olympian.
For God's sake.
Blow your mind.
Oh, I'm going next time.
Oh, it's life affirming.
If you spot it, Jennifer, let me know because I'd love to see that.
It's incredible. And the guys, actually, they're amazing. The guys who put it on, they're all just, I think, brothers and mates from Crumlin. And clearly obsessed with music. Yeah. And they also play their local pub every Wednesday night. Great crack. Anyway.
Listen, Jennifer, it was fantastic. Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it. I wish you every success. I hope we come bouncing out of this this tragedy, I suppose, really, with a lot more, with more optimism and more sensitivity to the rest of humanity and a very positive outlook. I'll tell you, I'm going to buy myself a sleeping bag for queuing outside the pub.
Oh yeah!
When they make the announcement, I'm going to be first in the queue. I just can't wait to meet my friends for a couple of pints.
Tell me about it. The party I'm going to have. And actually, there's a line in that Van Morrison song, and it's like, you know, you can put on your summer dress, your Easter bonnet, and all the rest. And it's just that anticipation of, you know, celebrating with somebody. Yeah, I'm going to have one hell of a. I've just moved house, so my housewarming has been delayed, but it'll be one hell of a party, I think, when we do get there.
Wreck the joint. Jennifer, thank you very much. And
thank you, Lorcan.
We'll do it again soon. Cheers.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more from other data leaders, please subscribe below.